Hi, this is Uncle Dennis, producer of the Earth First Update, wanting to invite you to tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz on Friday afternoons from 1 to 4:30, where we present environmental programs from around the world. Starting off at 1 o'clock with Radio EcoShock, we visit the world of changing climate. And at 2 o'clock, we go to Costing of the Earth from the BBC4. At 2:30, we present Eco News, a report from the North Coast Environmental Center produced at KHSU in Arcata, California. At 3 o'clock is the Earth First Update, produced by yours truly, bringing you all the environmental news you need to know. At 3:30, we present Terra Verde, produced at the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. And at 4 o'clock, Sea Change Radio. I'd like to invite you to tune into any of all of these programs right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org.
Son, I just wanted to just take her hair and just yank her, yo.
Oh, my God, you should have. You should have.
I just want to throw her down the stairs. I can just stand her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my. Yo, you know how it is.
Yes, I know, girl. I know.
You know.
I know.
Better get on up and put it down. Party people, let's gather around. It's plain to see, I'm Hello B. Here to get it started ASAP. I study hard and I pass my test. Never let the haters ever get me stressed. My crew's the best and they got my back. My bodyguard can't make give you respect, but he'll leave you alone if you behave. This ain't White Castle, but I'm what you crave. I need you all. Back around and crack it up. Gotta get out of town and pack it up. Feeling me soft, I better black it up. All of my people.
let you know about something that needs to happen real soon. You got to save Free Radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, and maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org. Or you could send mail to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061.
Welcome to Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, coming up next on Free Radio. That's going to be the July 19th show, Thursday. It's at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org. If you're listening to it while it's on the air, if you catch it off the air, you have to go to the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. Right now we're having website problems, so you have several choices. You can keep looking at the lost shows section of the website and hope to see us put up the shows when we are able to. Or you can go to the latest shows and look for the Thursday shows. And there are 2 shows in July currently, including the present one, that are on Thursday. I think those would be the July 5th and the July 12th shows. So those are available under latest shows if you look up the HuffSantaCruz.org website. We'll hope to fix that soon. And in the meantime, if you're listening, enjoy the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And lots of, action around the issues of reopening the bathrooms, public bathrooms closed, essentially as part of the false narrative, the kind of paranoid narrative being spread about homeless folks by authorities, right-wing activists, anxious residents, that somehow the best way to deal with homelessness is to exclude it from sight and from town in turn by criminalizing homeless people and cutting back on their resources. We saw this begin back in the summer of 2012. Well, it didn't begin then. It's been kind of going on for decades. But most recently, what prompted protests, such as the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall, the group that wanted to end the sleeping ban, and actually was somewhat successful in limiting its actual enforcement, that was prompted by the closing of facilities at the homeless, what I call lack of services center, the homeless services center, as they call it. And that was in June of 2015. More recently, in February, Mount Loudoun Nelson closed its bathrooms, put up an iron wrought fence, began patrolling more heavily, essentially created new rules for people using the park and coming into the center, refusing access to the bathrooms unless you are a paying customer of their services or a patron of what they're doing. And that, as I say, of the various activities happening there. So, as regular listeners may know, various groups have objected to that, the ACLU, the new group Conscience and Action, of course our group, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we've been protesting and demonstrating and trying to educate the public and expose the absurdity of claiming you're protecting public health and safety by shutting down bathrooms and wash stations and used to be access to Sharps containers, but they don't even allow Sharps containers where they used to at the Loudoun Nelson Center, though that was some years ago. So I'm going to be playing some of our recent interviews and research at the Loudoun Nelson Center Park, or Laurel Park, as it's called, the park adjacent to Loudoun Nelson Center. There's a children's playground, a big grassy area, basketball court. And, again, a park that they're closing down and closing off at night, but also during the day, making it more heavily patrolled, this time by a Parks and Rec ranger, who actually came up upon us as we did some tabling on the edge of the park last Tuesday. Essentially harassing one of us for having a dog on the inside the park off a leash, having a bike leaning up against a fence. And you'll be able to hear some of that today and also possibly on Sunday when I complete the playing of all these files, which I may not be able to get to today. I'm also concerned to get the latest update from activist Brent Adams, who is running a 24-hour storage program without any support from the city. In fact, there are rumors that there have been threats against him by the city. I want to see if I can confirm those rumors by talking to him today. We'll see if we can get him on the line. So we're dialing him now and see if we can get through to the guy. He runs a storage... Well, let's see. We're having a little problem here. Let's try again. He runs a storage system. It's a truck with a lot of bins in it where you can store your stuff. You come in the morning, you can leave your stuff there between 7 and 9, and then you can pick it up between 5 and 7 in the afternoon, or you can leave it overnight. It enables you to go around town without having to truck everything around on your back and also be visibly homeless, and so a target for discrimination and avoidance and fear in the increasingly, sadly, normal hostility that homeless people generally seem to be, at least some of them report, being confronted with. Let's see if we can get through to Brent. If I can get this phone to work, that is. Brent often answers and has also been researching camps threatened with being closed down recently. Most homeless people have no shelter, and they have to camp where they can. It looks like we may not be able to reach him. So,
Warming Center program.
Yeah, this is what we got a recording here.
Warming Center program is closed for the season, but we are offering the day and night storage program, opening between 7 and 9 in the morning and 5 to 7 p.m. at night, over by the Warriors Stadium, behind Wheelworks, a little parking lot back there by the levee. Look for the white shuttle van. We'll be able to store your blankets, bedding, and other personal belongings. You'll sign a basic contract. It's all going to be good, and we're happy to help you. If you need shelter, do call the Homeless Services Center at 458-6020. Squeaky wheel gets the grease on that one. If you need blankets, or warm clothing, leave a message, keep calling back. Take good care of yourself so we can take care of those around us, and we'll see you soon at the Warming Center program.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hi, Brent. This is Robert calling with a live free radio taping because we want to go to do a show at 6 o'clock this evening. I've heard rumors that there's some kind of city pressure to shut down your storage, but also I've heard reports your storage is going very well in terms of its ability to serve people who are using it. If you can give us an update on that, plus anything you found regarding, I guess there have been reportedly threats to go after encampments for people who have no choice but to try to sleep somewhere, and they try to sleep together for a combination of safety, community purposes, safety of property as well, I imagine. Give me a call, 423-4833, and kind of give us your perspective on that, any news you may have for us. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. It looks like we'll not be able to, at least with any definite assurance, get an interview from him today, but we will press on anyway, so don't go away. So, unsuccessful there. Let's see if we can get a hold of Amber Whitson, who's up in Berkeley. She was threatened with her colleagues with being forced to yet move again with her friends who are living in RVs up in Berkeley, previously stationed down at the wharf or parked down at the wharf for quite a long period of time. We've heard some of her history and background in previous broadcasts. The city of Berkeley is providing no alternatives for these folks who are providing their own shelter, but apparently that doesn't suit the so-called liberal progressive majority of the city council, or at least the city manager, who apparently may be pulling the strings behind the scenes. Let's see if we can get a hold of her on the phone. And we're ringing her now.
Hello?
Hello, Amber.
Yes.
This is Robert in Santa Cruz with Free Radio yet again.
Hey, Robert. How you doing?
Probably pretty good. Sitting inside a warm house, no rain. But I guess I'm calling because when I left you, last Sunday, I think it was, you were being threatened with Monday hassles where you and others were parked, right?
Right. And we didn't get hassled on Monday, but we got an officer on Tuesday coming down and giving us some, you know, typical bullshit story about some made-up stuff some business owner in the area supposedly accused us of. So, but I didn't really like being on the street where we were, getting the sound of trains funneled right at our ears anyway. So we've moved around the corner and we're all lining one side of 4th Street now.
How many are you?
Same block, basically.
How many are you now, Amber?
How many of us? Let's see. There is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 6 of us.
And so, in a way, your numbers, you have to say, are diminishing.
There's 7 of us.
Maybe, are they diminishing or not? Your numbers shrinking? Or are you hanging in there? What's going on?
Oh, our numbers are staying pretty stable now. I mean, the faction of us that's out here. And there's actually, I believe, there's 8 or 9 of us. Let's see. I think he means out here in Berkeley.
Oh, okay.
No, our numbers haven't shrunk in general. I mean, there's still the same amount of us, but out here in Berkeley, there's the mission, Frank, you, me, the Papa, Van Alley, Jessica, Paul. So, there's 7? I thought that was 9. Okay, 7, yes. She says 7, there's 7 of us.
Well, it's good, and it sounds like your spirits are still good. I know that you were telling me that originally you had, 26 vehicles or 26 people, I'm not sure which.
26 people.
And that was, I don't know, how many vehicles?
There's still the same amount of vehicles. There's still the same 13. Well, actually, one of them got towed. But those people had kind of broken off from my faction and were doing their own thing. And then apparently ended up getting their vehicle towed from them. Which just goes to show, don't let them divide and conquer you.
You're here. I got you there. So, you you're still in the same neighborhood. You've been getting, you got one complaint from the, one bit of pressure from the police. No threats of being further pushed on?
No, none other than the one from the police, which wasn't exactly a full threat. It was more like a vague threat, but it was a threat nonetheless, so.
So are you feeling pretty comfortable about staying where you are right now?
Yeah, minus the train whistles, which at least where the place where the train whistles are quieter. I really don't do train whistles much. It sets me on edge. But as far as the neighborhood goes, despite the fact that we're right across the street from a daycare, everybody in the area seems to be remarkably understanding of our situation.
How is this new community that you're adjacent to treating you? I mean, it's an industrial area, I understand, but you said police claimed one complaint. Have you had much contact with the folks in the businesses nearby?
A couple of them just walk by and sneer, but for the most part, they're actually pretty cool. You know, they understand we're just living.
Do they bring out cocoa and cookies?
No, they're not quite that hospitable, but the fact that they don't send out cops is good enough for me.
Well, that sounds good. Or at least it doesn't sound as bad as it could be. Anything else happening in Berkeley you want to pass on?
Well, I started my career, or whatever you want to call it, as a commissioner in the city of Berkeley last night on Berkeley's Human Welfare and Community Action Commission. That was intriguing. It was a great group of people, really, really passionate about the cause, but clearly being undermined by the city staffers assigned to them, as most commissions and committees and subcommittees and task forces of good citizens end up. The city staffers, this commission that I just started last night, right? Well, I didn't start the commission, but I just started my time on it last night. This commission has been working on a set of policies regarding homelessness that they are going to send to the city council for what the city council should do, which is pretty much in line with everybody else's suggestions for policies regarding homeless people. You know, don't take people's shit. Give it back if you take it. Don't run them off from somewhere unless you know somewhere that they can run to. Give the people who live in tents as well as people who live in vehicles somewhere that they can sleep free from fear of citation and harassment and arrest. You know, the basics. And I've been following the work of this commission for months now and was just recently appointed to it by our super badass city council member, Cheryl Davila. So I went there and they had just last month voted amongst them that yes, they had their recommendation to send the city council ready and they wanted to send it on to them. But of course, commissions and committees and boards and whatnot are assigned city staffers who work for the city manager, who is evil. And so I honestly heard, I couldn't make this up, I honestly heard one of the city staffers who's assigned to them, when they asked when the policy would be presented to the council, say, well, we have to reformat it and change the font and then reformat it again and then maybe by the end of September it might get to the city council after the city manager has written her companion report. They submitted it last month. They submitted it in June. In June they submitted this thing just for it to go to the city manager and then to the city council. And one of the reasons why it won't make it to the city council till the end of the month after they get back from vacation, during the entire month of which, you know, the whole month of August, we will be at the mercy or lack thereof of the city manager. So one of the genuine reasons why they aren't going to get it to the city council till the end of September is because they have to change the font.
Well, yeah, the font is very important, Amber. You should realize that.
Of course. Helvetica, Sans Serif, you know.
Yeah, you have to present the right appearance here. Who is the staff person covering this human commission? What's it called? The commission on...
It's the Human Welfare and Community Action Commission. The staff person's name is Wing Wong.
Wing Wong. That reminds me of an old joke, but I might be accused of being insensitive.
And she had some sidekick named Kristen, who also works for the city, who was overseeing us with her, but neither of them seemed particularly kind people. You know, but the people that are on this commission are great people. They are passionate about this. Everybody, it was just a very jovial atmosphere. very jovial atmosphere. Everybody is very committed to human rights and human, you know, justice and human welfare.
What's happening around the city with other folks in vehicles and with other folks outside as far as, you know, have you gotten any more kind of news to report over the last week?
Nothing eventful, just the usual Caltrans clearing people out every other week type stuff happens. My friend's sleeping in my van right now because it's Caltrans Day underneath the University Avenue overpass, so he had to put everything he owns in storage yesterday so that they can come through and not throw away any of his shit today. So he is exhausted and sleeping in my van as we speak. He just arrived at it this morning.
Any word from Oakland? Because I know that there's a lot of encampments there.
I was at a meeting of Alameda County's Everyone Home, which is the people who solicit the HUD funding and whatnot for Alameda County. And I heard Mayor Schaaf from Oakland say that the village, which I don't know if you guys are very familiar with the village, it's a piece of land that people have started creating tiny homes on in East Oakland. PNN does a lot of stuff with them, Tiny and 4 News Radio. But the village is apparently about to turn into a construction zone, so they're going to have to relocate all of the tiny homes and all of the everything there to elsewhere soon. I'm not sure how soon, but that's something that's going to happen, apparently.
Well, apparently, I mean, tiny homes is sort of one of these sort of demonstration projects, which has very little to do with most of the homeless people in Oakland, right? They're mostly setting up their own tents under freeways and such, isn't that right?
Definitely, yeah. These people definitely they kind of claimed the land, not legally speaking, but and Oakland kind of let them, and then they put tiny homes up on them, and I think they have a garden and stuff there. They have a lot of stuff going on there at the village, but they're about to have to relocate all of it. Progress, of course.
How long were they there for?
They've been there for years. I'm not sure how many years, but it's definitely multiple years.
And what's the location of the camp or the village?
It's in East Oakland. It's just a city block, a dirt covered city block, from what I understand.
Do you know where it is?
I haven't been there personally, no. No, I don't make it that far from here.
I gotcha. It's going to save gas. Well, and what's coming up in the next couple of weeks that we should know about, if there is anything that you want to mention?
Well, there is a city council meeting on July 24th that we are, of course, naturally not on the agenda for, that we plan on going to and bringing the topic of our plight up during public comment, as we do anytime we're not on the agenda. We're hoping to be able to push some city council members. I'm not sure if any of them will be willing to or able to, but we're going to try and push some city council members to hold another emergency meeting. I really don't know how likely it is, but before August, before they go on vacation, because a month of us being at the mercy or lack thereof of the city manager could be disastrous. It really could.
Any word on the fate of the two lawsuits that have been filed, one against Caltrans and the other, I guess, the First Amendment lawsuit? I could have this a little bit muddled, but...
I'm surprised it came for the homeless. Right?
Correct, yeah.
Right. As far as I know, those lawsuits are still in full swing. Ocean Newman is incredibly busy working on the Caltrans lawsuit, and we know a couple of other lawyers who are very hard at work on the First They Came for the Homeless lawsuit. City of Berkeley's not going to do any rider without being forced to do so by a judge, so that's what they're working on.
You heard anything about, you remember Starbucks supposedly changed its policy about admitting people to their bathrooms. Is that the case in Berkeley?
I believe it is. I don't go to Starbucks too often, but I heard it's not just the bathrooms. I heard that people can just go in there and sit and hang out, even if they don't buy anything. That's what I heard.
You heard that from the people advertising Starbucks or from people doing it?
From what I understand, people are just doing it. I don't think they're actually advertising it, though. But I believe that they're just doing it. I can't imagine them not doing it, seeing as how they fucked up so bad up there in Chicago or wherever it was that they were hella wrong last time.
Pittsburgh,
you know?
Philadelphia, I'm not sure, something like that. Okay, well, good. I'm glad you're still in possession of your vehicle and a place to park at the moment. And are you having to move every 72 hours, or have you been saved from that?
No, we only one of our vehicles got red tagged, and it wasn't mine. It was the other organizer woman's vehicle, and it was parked in front of a daycare. So we're guessing they wanted their illegal street sign, or illegal sidewalk sign, I mean, to be visible. So they had her red tagged. Aside from that, there have been no further red tags. Nope.
Illegal sidewalk sign?
Huh?
Illegal sidewalk sign. What's that?
Illegal sidewalk sign. Well, see, when the city of Berkeley passed all these sidewalk ordinances recently, determining when and where and how people can sleep on the sidewalks, they also made it illegal for businesses to have their signs out on the sidewalk blocking the sidewalks if the sidewalk is a certain width. And the sign that the RV was quote-unquote blocking is taking up more of that very narrow sidewalk than it's legally allowed to take up. Of course, nobody will ever enforce those ordinances on the actual businesses that violate them. But they were indeed violating an ordinance by having their sign there, and instead they called in a nuisance complaint against an RV that was parked blocking their illegal sign. So.
And you have generously chosen, or the person that was harassed is generously choosing not to retaliate by demanding the enforcement of the sidewalk sign law?
Yep, well, you know, we just don't have time for retaliatory measures, you know.
Okay.
Won't get us anywhere.
Well, I hope you continue to be successful in, you know, asserting what seems to me sort of like basic right. And again, we've been talking with
Amber Whitson of Berkeley Marina Friends on Wheels over in Berkeley, California.
Who can be reached by going to
Vehicle Dwellers of the Bay on Instagram and Vehicle Dwellers of the Bay on Facebook.
So it's Vehicle Dwellers of the Bay here, there, and everywhere.
Yep, you got it.
Hey, thank you, Amber, and we'll be playing this tonight, 6 to 8.
Right on. Thank you, Robert. Great talking with you.
Same here. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
And that was Amber Whitson. If I got her name right, I'm never sure about that one. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back.
As you know, I'm meeting with President Putin on Monday. We will, of course, ask your favorite question about meddling. I will be asking that question again. You know, what am I going to do? If he may deny it. I mean, it's one of those things. So all I can do is say, did you, and don't do it again. But he may deny. I mean, well, you'll be the first to know. I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius. So I have to figure out what's going on with.
He is the very model of a very stable genius. Of all the U.S. presidents, he is the Mussoliniest. He learned a lot of things according to his Wikipedia and demonstrates his ample intellect on social media. When people are in need, he is the best at making fun of them. He knows 11 words, although he can't spell even one of them. An overly flamboyant, orange, autocratic, scuzzy man who's undermining everything Obama did because he can. He's firmly resolute, but how he thinks and feels and talks depends on any of the crap he may have heard that day on Fox and Friends. And though his brain is smaller than his tiny little penis, he is the very model of a very stable genius.
I am doing a great job, that I can tell you.
He's very good at pushing all the bullshit that he's peddling, but won't concern himself with matters such as Russian meddling. His campaign manager's in jail on charges that are felony, and no one really cares about him less than his wife, Melanie.
Sorry, Mulaney.
He's really great with children when it comes to immigration. He thinks he's making progress with denuclearization. He's only hated from Seattle to the Carolinas and likes to greet his lady friends by grabbing their vaginas. Queen Elizabeth did not see that coming. He's certainly proficient at hijacking an election. At NATO, he is not afraid of not taking direction. Aside from all his ignorance, the chaos and the penis, he is the very model of a very stable genius.
I would say the highest level of special.
He's always been a pro at things like violating protocols and reproducing other egotistical Neanderthals. To all our greatest allies, he decides to say get out of here while doing all he can to satisfy his daddy, Vladimir. There's no one as accomplished in the art of the distraction. Of anything that's factual, he orders a retraction. When greeting foreign leaders, he prefers the pomp and circumstance and vomits verbal diarrhea to satisfy his sycophants. There never was a military draft he couldn't dodge, and he is excellent at advocating racist and misogyny. He likes to make up stories with convenience exclusion of topics that he finds make him feel threatened like collusion. He expertly persuades his base that Mueller's hunting for a witch instead of their own president, who's obviously Putin's bitch. He calls reporters fake and says the Democrats are sour grapes, then lies awake at night and thinks about those Russian baby tits. Oh, Never has there been a staple genie as smart as he. And if you don't believe me, you can just ask Sarah Huckabee. I know his brain is smaller than his tiny little penis. He is the very model of a very staple genie. Whatever, girl.
And that was Randy Rainbow's latest, A Very Stable Genius. On YouTube, you can find it there along with all his other stuff. I'm always a bit reluctant to play his Russiagate conspiracy stuff because I think it's really does a real disservice to the narrative to push this essentially Democratic Party narrative, which is a partisan narrative against Trump, who I have no brief for at all, nor breaches for either, for that matter. But, you know, it's in order to mobilizing anti-Putin, using him, Putin, as the great demon in this situation, in essentially excusing Democratic Party's Democratic National Convention destruction of the Bernie Sanders campaign. It's many years of essentially creating, by ignoring really important issues and supporting the military-industrial complex and maintaining the drug war, all that stuff which they share with the Republican Party, and also, of course, are being funded by the wealthiest 1%. If in turning away from those issues and instead focusing on the new evil enemy, the Putin, is ridiculous. And I encourage people to check out, there's a debate on Democracy Now, if you're a regular listener to Democracy Now, between Glenn Greenwald and a guy, actually, that Glenn Greenwald, who's a writer for The Intercept and one of the people who helped publicize Julian Assange's, the NSA spying procedures, which are still continuing, unabated, collateral murder by U.S. military forces, complete lack of accountability for all this stuff. And I think the truth of this matter, which, you know, we had always hoped, I don't know if I'd hoped, but I'm always pleased when this information comes out, had to see it twisted around and instead turned into a, gee, if only we can get Trump out and put the Democrats back in power, everything is going to be great. And, of course, ironically, when Trump is talking nice with Putin and, you know, being critical of the military and NATO, although I don't really believe he has any consistent positions on this, he's a showman and a salesman, this becomes the basis for a new anti-Russian hysteria, sort of similar to the anti-communist hysteria of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I guess my motto is the one I usually push on this show, which is you can attack Trump all you want, and that's good, but attack Trumpism. That's even more important because it's the policies you want changed. They will shift around the cast and the figureheads all they want. They'll distract you with identity politics from the Democrats and abortion and gun stuff on the Republicans, each of them essentially trying to persuade ordinary common people to abandon their own interests in recognizing that they're not getting paid a tenth of what they're worth, and they're having to pay ridiculous rents, and they're having to deal with banks that have no control, and essentially the wealth of the country goes to the wealthy, and the rest of the people get to work for them. That's the issue, not this crap about Putin or, you know, proper political speech. None of that stuff is, to me, worth a damn. Anyway, so moving on, let's take a listen to the protests that we did. I should say it's really a tabling we did at the Loudon Nelson Laurel Park area last Tuesday. You know, some of it is pretty self-explanatory, but I will interrupt from time to time to give you my thoughts. Here at the Loudon Nelson Center, actually the gateway to the Loudon Nelson Center on whatever this Washington Street is, it's about 1:10 on July 17th. I'm talking with
Larry.
And Larry,
Nice day, sunny day. You just came from the senior lunch.
Yeah.
And you say that you felt that perhaps the closing of the bathrooms here might have been done better, done differently, not been done at all?
Well, without disallowing access to the bathroom for the general public whose taxes are paying for this, its maintenance and repair. Right. So, yeah.
And you say that you come at 10:40 and you can use the bathroom, what, for 15 minutes before the lunch begins?
15 minutes before and 15 minutes after the senior lunch, yeah.
If you're here 16 minutes, you got to hold your water.
Yeah.
Have you actually seen people denied access for being here too early?
Oh, a lot of them. Yeah.
What have you seen that you want to describe?
Well, all the other people that are out here urinating in the park.
No, it's in the open air, a la fresco. Yeah.
Right, that's what's happening.
Is there more of a, should we say, the scent of the outdoors these days because of the closing of the bathroom?
I haven't noticed the scent, but I've seen the actions.
What about the poo-poo situation?
I haven't seen too much of a problem with that, but I'm certain it exists around here in the way in the corners.
Now, how long have you been using the senior services here?
Oh, shoot. Maybe 10 months.
And was there a problem with the bathrooms prior to February, which is when I understand they began to close them?
Well, there apparently was some kind of vandalism.
Did you see a problem yourself?
Oh, no. These are probably the cleanest bathrooms in the city.
Did you ever experience difficulty using them based on, I don't know, somebody blocking the stalls or inappropriate behavior, that sort of thing?
Not really.
Have you heard any accounts of that happening from people you know? Not from the authorities, mind you, but from fellow people in the senior program?
Really? No.
Was there any demand from seniors or other people using these facilities that you know of that these bathrooms be locked except during those times that they're open?
Okay, I didn't understand the question.
In other words, was there a demand that they do this current policy from anybody that you know? I mean, did the seniors say to you, gosh, I wish they would have closed those bathrooms sooner?
No. I think this was an internal policy due to upper management here.
If you were to poll the people on the senior lunch, do you think they would want them to stay closed or open? What would be or would they care one way or the other?
I think it depends on how much time any individual would spend here. If they want to come down here with kids or grandkids or whatever like that, in that case, the answer would be, yeah, I'm certain that they would be, put those bathrooms open.
What about you and the senior population? Do you think among the group of seniors using it, they would like to see that policy change?
Oh, yeah.
You're pretty clear on that.
Yeah. No doubt.
And you say that because you've heard a lot of comments about that? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the talk of the town. It's our secret number we get when we get in there at 10:30. We get the secret number.
And now it's gone because the time has passed, Larry.
It's past 1:15.
Time to go wee-wee in the bushes.
Well, I can't.
And by secret number, what Larry means is the code. You need to have a particular code, just like if you are, for example, a patron of Trader Joe's, you can get a code to go to use the bathroom. It used to be open without a code, and I haven't had any trouble using the Trader Joe's bathroom. I've even been able to use the sacred bathroom downtown at New Leaf, but I've heard of others who have had that problem. Anyway, that's what he's talking about when he says the code. And they change it quite frequently, apparently, so as to exclude the unwanted.
I have my other techniques, but...
I see. So, has there been any talk of asking the management to change this policy back to the old policy or changing it in some way?
I'm not aware of any channels of discussion in that direction. That's outside of my hands.
Would you be interested in that yourself?
No, not at the moment. I'm certain it's going to turn over. They're talking about it turning over somehow, but to what degree and what the nature of the policy would be is unknown at this point.
The reason I mention is we have a petition urging them to reopen the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to sign it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, step this way.
Okay. Sorry for the smoke.
No, that's all right. You have to come to the sidewalk to smoke and all that.
Simplest community. I would have probably said to the general public, the taxpayers who are sure. supporting this.
Yeah,
but, I mean, because you sort of picked out on the homeless there, and I can understand why.
Well, that's our that's the group we're interested in here, but also, you know, the general public, too, for sure.
So the petition that we circulated read as follows: reopen the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms. Lack of access to public bathrooms, both at night and increasingly during the day, is a health hazard and local human rights violation that has become more frequent this year. The Loudoun Nelson bathrooms have been locked for months without any public process. Problems with public bathrooms include occasional vandalism, improper needle use and disposal, and misuse. These are unfortunate but predictable consequences of public use. These problems need to be addressed by providing more, not less, resources. Sharps, containers, more attention to staffing, additional bathrooms. They should not be used as an excuse to close them off to the community. Making these bathrooms, Laurel Park, and the Loudoun Nelson Community Center less welcome to the homeless community is neither fair, effective, helpful, nor acceptable. Disabled folks, those outside, and community members generally need access. And then we got about, I think we ended up getting 7 or 8 signatures in the course of an hour. There weren't that many people in the park that day, but almost everybody we approached expressed interest in and actually signed the petition. So that was kind of an unexpected consequence. I often find people are reluctant to sign anything, at least stuff that we're pushing, but not in this occasion.
She patrols the park.
Yeah, I think she's, you know, comes up and down as the Parks and Rec Rangers just walked by. Okay, someone's... And, hey, thank you, Larry.
Okay.
Now, if you're... I also have, if you're interested, this, which is... It's essentially a kind of a poll, health and safety survey, which asks, you know, were you denied access to the bathrooms? And the answer is, you haven't even asked, probably because you know about it.
Well, I have asked anyway, and they still wouldn't let me do it.
Really?
Yeah, despite the fact that I'm here at least for the lunchtime. But once it's outside that period of time, then
how many times have you asked them?
Oh, probably 3. I mean, I learned my lesson after 3.
Huh. So initially you did, and then you thought, pointless to do it.
Yeah, it was pointless.
Who did you talk to?
Oh, I think I talked to the security guard once, a couple of people in there. I can't give you names, but...
And what we're trying to do, of course, is organize folks to essentially press the authorities to reverse this policy so that we can use the bathrooms again, or at least some people can. I'm not down here that much.
Mm-hmm. So where'd the thing go? Oh, here it is.
If you want, you can have a seat while you're doing it.
There you go.
It
won't take long.
No problem. Larry, say that again.
Well, there is another issue, and that's people that might have issues like a colonoscopy bag or
catheter
of some sort, and
just bowel,
and they can't lose the bowels too. But I mean, if something goes wrong and there's some kind of medical issue that comes up, I mean, that could be a big liability issue for the center.
And not to mention for the person involved.
Well, them too, of course. But that's just a concern that I have.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you have it. They apparently, if they do have it, they aren't really addressing it much.
Yeah, because, you know...
We're talking with...
Nutcracker Nick.
Hey, Nick.
When I asked the 2 staff members the other day to define for me the parameters of bathroom use, they said they were under strict instructions not to let anybody use that bathroom except those attending events here. And I said, how strict is that? What about somebody who has a medical need? They said, no way. I said, what about, you know, an elderly, really frail person? And they said, no, there are no exceptions. And both of those young men said there are absolutely no exceptions.
Except for the staff, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, and you, what we're talking with?
Beverly Hoffman. I have walked in with my medications and things showing that I had medical reasons to use those bathrooms and need for those bathrooms, and they denied me over and over again. and have created a whole lot of undue hardship for me that I can't afford.
And the last time that happened was?
Last week. And I quit going in and asking. It's happened so many times. It's like, why? It makes it harder for me to get to some place where I can go.
And what is the nearest place? They say that they send people to the police station. Have you been there?
To use the bathroom?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been there not to use the bathroom and needed the bathroom while I was there, and we were there outside waiting for over an hour and a half.
Really?
Just to talk to a cop.
Really?
Yes.
You did to go poo-poo right in front in order to pee?
No, I peed my pants.
Can I go next, sir?
Yeah, and we're talking with?
My name is Carrie Ann Kelly. I'm 47 years old. I had a tumor in my right femur. I have a screw in my hip and a rod. And my tumor was benign, first one in history. And I think if anyone has a bathroom issue, should be able to use the bathroom.
No, not in Santa Cruz. We have a clean town. You got to have a house to use a bathroom.
Well, my father was USMC, which is United States Marine Corps. Three people hearts, lethal weapon, let's use our bathroom.
Unfortunately, he's not here to, should we say, break down the doors so that we can all use the bathroom.
And my father's deceased because it was a sad issue, but it's just sad that we can't use our bathroom to keep ourselves clean and people don't have to have bathroom access. That's garbage.
I tend to agree with you. We've been talking to
Carrie Ann Kelly.
Anything else, Carrie?
Have a great day and smile!
There you go. Or else. So we're plotting now to get into the bathroom. We learned the code is 1980 during the senior lunch.
You did that for the day,
right?
You know. That makes a big difference. Yeah.
Right.
And I guess Wes and Ursula are going in to try to check out the scene inside. I'm tempted to go with them.
And Wes White is someone who regular listeners know. Salinas homeless advocate and activist, also running for mayor on a kind of a people's ticket over there, and a video journalist who has videoed a lot of Santa Cruz events and events around homeless civil rights in many cities, ranging from Berkeley, Sacramento, to, of course, his home territory, Salinas. And he was reporting a lot on the Lapis Road refugees who were driven off of, there were RV people living off of on Lapis Road down in Marina in Monterey County. He showed up with his cameraman, Dredd, and he was kind of videoing what was going on as people tried to ask to use the bathrooms. You're going to now hear at least the first leg of his journey, and then he and a woman named Ursula, who is particularly passionate about this issue, who showed up at a Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting and wanted to really get involved. You're later going to hear an interview about her personal experiences and what kind of motivated her to become so concerned about this issue. She and Wes and a couple of other folks began the great journey to try to find a bathroom to use, though they weren't in any of the programs. Though, of course, actually, there's only one program going on at this time in Loudoun-Nelson. This demonstration started around 1:30 and lasted till about 2:30, 3 o'clock, maybe a little bit before. And if you looked at the neon bulletin board that they have, the electronic bulletin board inside Loudoun-Nelson, there was really only one group meeting, although there seemed to be a lot of people in private offices or individual offices, or at least I noticed that more than I'd seen in the past. So here we have locked bathrooms, people who need them. There were also some kids playing in the park, and I think they allow kids in the park who are part of a middle-class group or maybe just, you know, accompanied by their mothers. I'm tempted to say suitably dressed, but we don't have proof of that yet. Although I'm quite suspicious that there's a discriminatory aspect of this, but, you know, we'll see if that's actually the case. This is only the first of a number of possible research missions. We'll see if we do more. But here's some more from this latest Tuesday protest and research expedition.
I'm tempted to go with them. Can somebody hold down the table? Just keep... All right. Hey, Dredd. I'm going to join this crew and see what's happening. Hey, wait up, folks. Wes, wait up. to catch up with these guys. Porch at the back of the Loud Nelson Felsen Center, there's a lot of... Hey, Cherie. And there's a lot of homeless possessions, bags and bundles. Not being disturbed, which is good.
And someone remarked to me, I'm not sure if it was true or not, that this really was the... It looked like about 20 or 30 backpacks, but there was a group of about 10 or 12 kids. And it would be hard for me to believe that all these kids, this few number of kids would have so many backpacks. But, you know, it could have been them. I was, I guess, hoping beyond hope, having heard of and seen Brent Adams' storage activity, hoping maybe there was some more lenient policy suddenly at Loud Nelson Center. That would, of course, would be contradictory and unlikely and ridiculous. And, of course, it apparently wasn't the case. Privileges for the children of the privileged and exclusion for those who are poor.
Due to illegal activity, best rooms are closed to the public. That's what the sign said. We're inside.
It's a kind of
quiet, peaceful day inside here.
The information desk.
We're at the staff center. And you gotta go, right?
Sure, go ahead. Check out.
There you go. Usually it beeps. Thanks. Doesn't seem to be beeping. There you go.
Hi. Oh, okay. Yeah. So whatever time.
Hold your order. We were waiting for someone who was on the staff member was on the phone.
Are you here participating with an activity?
Not right now.
Unfortunately, the restrooms are only for patrons that are here participating in activities.
And
I'm actually off the clock, so I gotta go back here.
Where's the closest one?
If you go to the police department at Depot Fry or. Depot Fry or the parking police department.
Oh.
I needed to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the police department is the closest one. Okay, let's go there.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Good day.
The crew moves along. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How's it going with you?
Well, we haven't been able to use the bathroom yet, but we're hanging in there. We hope we don't wet our pants. That would be important, don't you think?
Interesting policy.
We know you're not to blame, right? But you are officiating. So I'm going to, Wes, Ursula, I'm going to go back to the table. You guys go ahead. I'm going to make sure we sign up some more folks.
Okay.
All right. All right. So going back into 301 Center Street, Loud Nelson Center. Let's see what we got here. It's a variety of hosted events here. Dance classes, World Harmony Chorus, Senior Ping Pong, Computer Lab volunteers, Popcorn Palace, not sure what that is, and a variety of flyers that are in various flyer holders. And we also have the neon sign, which has the time, the date, the weather, and a series of classes and events that are being held. Now, so for instance, right now, and this is a Tuesday, you've got, well, let's see, between 1:15 and 4 o'clock, there's the senior high cap in room 5, teen center 2 to 9:30, the teen center. And then later on, there are 6 different events between 3:45 and 9, including Mom, Dad, and Me, Children's Polynesian Dance, Kui Gong and Tai Chi, African dance, AA, 2 different groups. So that seems to be what's actually available.
But of course, the problem is that I think there was one event happening while we were there, and it already started. My thoughts, at one time I suggested to people, just say you're a member of the event, get the code and use the bathroom, I don't know, step into the event, thank them for, letting the essentially saying you were interested in taking a look and seeing what happened, and then leave. But we haven't tested that one out yet. I thought that might be one thing we could do. But that may be something that we do in the future to see if they are going to... Really, the issue is how far you press this. It's already been... There's been embarrassing publicity to the Loudoun Nelson Center already when a woman was denied access and actually peed on the grass outside, and six police officers were called, according to both the Sentinel and a witness who I talked to, a woman named Cooper. And I think you may have heard her talk about this earlier. It happened a month or two ago, I think, but it caused a stir and actually got prompted Conscience and Action's first protest around this. Conscience and Action, of course, is a group that essentially through its two protests and then its meeting with Martine Bernal, the city manager, may have been responsible for the reopening of the San Lorenzo bathrooms, which is certainly a good thing. But those Loudoun Nelson bathrooms are still closed, and that's not a good thing.
And in some of the cases of the Loudoun Nelson Center, one of the rooms, room number 6, seems to have been turned into a private office. No calls in the hall, as a sign. And there's not a lot happening right now. A lot of the rooms are empty. I don't know if there are folks protesting the way the ACLU is protesting by leaving the Loudoun Nelson Center.
Yes.
And there are operational drinking fountains. Not the tastiest water. Hello. Is an event about to happen, or is this an office?
This is an office.
Ah, just wondering. Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
One of the complaints I've had about the reallocation or the allocation of resources at places supposedly serving either the community or, in more specifically, people experiencing homelessness, like the Homeless Lack of Services Center out at Coral Street, is they have repurposed space, for example, from locker space. They've removed all the storage lockers, and instead they put in administrative offices in their place. As far as I know, I guess they have a storage cage now for bikes, but I'm not aware that there is a storage place. Maybe there is, and I'm not up on it out at the Coral Street Lack of Services Center, Homeless Lack of Services Center. And if anybody wants to update me on any of these issues, please give me a call at 423-4833. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you, and I can get more accurate information out to the community.
And off to the side, right before you hit the porch on the left, there are a series of tables and chairs, kind of cafe style. And again, the sign, as I mentioned before as I was coming in, unfortunately due to illegal activity, Loudoun Nelson Community Center restrooms are closed to the public. Patrons of the center may request access to the restrooms with staff assistance.
This, of course, is a misleading statement. Illegal activity suggests somehow that the bathrooms were the site of some kind of criminal activity that required them to be closed on a 24-hour basis to the general community. In the documents that I received from after three different postponements from the Parks and Rec Department and other city agencies, I have found general kind of vague claims about specific problems, almost all of them having to do with homeless presence, but very little about illegal activity, unless by that you mean sleeping or drug use. The drug use is the big deal, as though that, you know, is something that should close down rather than open up more public facilities. Because, you know, if you have a hepatitis A epidemic, you want more wash stations, not less. You want more Sharps containers, which used to be in Loudoun Nelson Center, not less. But with the kind of backward or you might say ass backward, right-wing, reefer madness, drug war mentality, which you have now in Santa Cruz continuing in spite of the fact you say, oh, marijuana is legalized and, you know, we're an enlightened community. People should remember that WHAM has been closed down for 6 months as a consequence of more repressive legislation by the city and repressive legislation by the state in terms of taxing and things of that sort, and not giving the right to medical marijuana that should have been maintained but has not been. But more important than even state legislation is how we behave here. I mean, marijuana became legal, functionally legal, to use medically because of actions undertaken by the community, not because the police are so sweet and wonderful and progressive or the city council is such a nice group, but because people began to do so and say, bite me, that they established places where people could go to get medical marijuana, the Cedar Street Club, until ironically, the progressives, so-called progressives, Crone, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and those that followed them, Rotkin and Matthews, closed that down by restrictions. Okay, well, that ringing in the background was Brent calling in from the 24-hour storage. Do I have that accurate, Brent?
Day and night storage.
Thank you. So I was saying earlier to folks on the show that there's a rumor around that you're getting some pressure to shut down a successful storage operation that, even though it was originally supposed to be assisted by the city back in November to provide you with a place at least and some kind of, I guess, financial help for staffing. Tell me if any of this is wrong. They just withdrew, and instead you had to, you know, there was no storage over the winter other than, of course, places in San Lorenzo Park where people perhaps could go to their friends and leave it in the tents there. And then you opened up storage about, what, 3-4 weeks ago here at the...
7 weeks ago.
7 weeks. Wow, it's been a long time.
Yes.
So how's it going there? What's going on?
That's a lot of backstory. We're going to just only talk about 2.0. What happened last year is, or early in the winter is, we're not really focusing on that because it's a new iteration. So we're finishing up our seventh week. It's going great. We have almost 90 people on board the shuttle program currently. We're looking to transition to something more permanent. We're in a parking lot right now with our transportable shuttle device with shelving on it. And we're looking for another a better location that's more amenable to the city. The city hasn't answered any of our outreach. I have an email paper trail, not unlike, I don't know, what you might think of Hillary's emails look like, just along from May 1st onward, where we're reaching out over and over to city workers, Mark Zettel of the Public Works, the police chief, the fire chief, and then finally Mark Zettel of Public Works, city manager. Among the library and every city council member. And then we've given them presentation after presentation, but we got, except for Chris Crone, who visited the program, we've heard zero response until yesterday with something dated July 10th saying that we are to stop our program immediately because of lack of permits, even though we tried to reach out and to find out what permits. But luckily, I have good things to say about our meeting today. We had a meeting with Alex Corey of planning, city planning, and then Susie O'Hara of, I think she's with the city manager's office, but she's called a principal financial analyst management or something like that. I'm not sure what her role is.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one tasked to forward the three-phase plan with the homeless encampments. So we met today, and luckily the meeting was more of a device to get us talking about what our intentions and about where we might, how the city could help us, where we might go, and what planning might. You know, all of a sudden, shit's getting real. Of course, they don't have a planning structure for this. We are essentially currently just a private registered vehicle you know, loading and offloading people's belongings in a parking lot, a metered parking lot. So it's not something they know really know what to do with. So frighteningly, they would, left to their own devices, come up with something that will not be beneficial for our program. So after about an hour meeting, hour-long meeting, we finally ended up with they're requesting a 6-month plan. They totally understand, and then Susie O'Hara used the word empathetic to the fact that now that we're in this parking lot with this many people focalizing their storage needs, it's going to be, we're going to need at least a month or 2 months to transition to another location. Also, they heard that we are hoping to either get a box truck, something more, because we're at 90, we're already maxing out our current transportable storage device. And so we'll have to either get a box truck, and we're doing our due diligence to find an actual building in Santa Cruz. That's really daunting because of the prices and lack of availability. But coming up with a 6-month plan of what we're hoping to do, and, you know, that we would like to be out of the parking lot within the next 2 months, and transitioning in 1 or 2 or 3 different ways.
Do you think, Brent, that did they state any actual real complaints they had received about anything regarding your services in that parking lot?
Yeah, they seem to have knowledge of the different quandaries that the city public workers had. Of course, she wasn't privy to the fact that we'd worked it out with them. They helped us find the best parking spot in that area so as to not, you know, be in their way. She wasn't privy to the relationship we've built with Bernie Escalante, lieutenant of the SCPD, and Officer Headley. Well, she seemed to have knowledge of lots of things that have been happening.
But did they have anything that said, oh, you almost burned down this. Oh, 3 people were shot over to the side. Oh, a great pile of feces. In other words, were there any particular complaints that they actually had?
No complaints whatsoever. We have a rule that no one using our program can camp within 2 city blocks or congregate, or, you know, and they can't be in the parking lot for more than 15 minutes. But when Susie visited the program, she unfortunately saw, you know, a tent nearby. Those people were not associated with our program, but she did what she only, her imagination led her to believe that we were actually kind of like a staging area for people camping in the area. She was happy to hear that that's not the case, and that we actually had the tent removed, which is really fucked up for us because we're not trying to reduce areas where people are camping in Santa Cruz. We know that's already a difficulty. But we really can't have tents right up on our situation. We asked them to move a little bit further away, especially once we heard that Susie O'Hara had attributed the tent to our program. We just can't have. So we're kind of like building our protocols on the fly. Like, the thing is, like, if there was a tent at the location of Food Not Bombs, what would they do? You know, they would be challenged because they're not trying to be a host for camping. On the other hand, that did happen over the winter time.
Well, actually, there were tents at Food Not Bombs in the summer before the San Lorenzo campground opened up. In fact, the fact that there were...
What can happen is, you know...
I mean, I think the fact that there were tents there prompted, you know, Mills to open up San Lorenzo Park because he didn't want them there, and he knew the Food Now Bombs was not going to drive them away. And I'm not suggesting you drove anybody away, even though you take a somewhat, you know.
No, it's in my mind. You know, we can't be seen having people, you know, focalizing camping near our program. At the same time, we're not trying to run people off. But the question was, what do we do if there's a tent within 10 feet of the place where we normally park? All of a sudden, there's a vision, you know, as they say, it's bad visuals.
Well, I hear you. You know, regarding tents and camps, you've also been, of course, concerned with the homeless outside in Santa Cruz, which is a Facebook page where you put up the various documentation of what you've seen and what other people who are out there have spoken of and expressed. Any new reports there that's not necessarily related to anything you're talking about with respect to, you know, your program, but you've also, you know, you've had, you know, keeping a weather eye on the city. What have you seen recently?
Well, as you recall, and you probably already talked about it, which was, and I don't know what has happened in the last day and a half, but some threat of camp cleanups down at what is formerly called Camp Paradise, that strip of North Levee, north of Highway 1 to the east behind the cemetery. And I'm not trying to bring the information out that there, you know, if there's more camping back there, and that some people had that business card saying that they were going to be cleaned up. I went down there a few times. What I discovered was something, a totally different story, and trying to figure out how to deal with that. We have women down there reporting lots of abuse, men, homeless men using drugs against them, you know, women who are addicted being forced to comply with sexual favors, women who need blankets and warm clothing being forced to comply with sexual favors, women being beaten. So you have a whole bunch of women down there, and they're trying to band together in camps now and protect each other. And there's one woman who asked me to help her form a women's self-defense group. So I've enlisted Lainey Sherman, who does that professionally, and another activist. I don't know if she's totally on board yet, but we are going to have self-defense training to kind of empower the women down there. That's something that's, of course, beside all of the things that we normally talk about, but it's a terrible result of, you know, people, you know, creating their own community that may not, you know, may be based on some things that aren't advantageous for all.
You also have been involved with working to establish bathroom facilities and open them up. This was before it, you know, even before Huff's recent push a year ago to the Give a Shit campaign, you established an online presence.
I'm driving around. You're cutting out.
Okay, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Any new comments on bathroom accessibility or developments there?
Robert, thank you for bringing all this up. It's very kind of you. Yeah, previously mentioned Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, the Facebook page. Downtown Bathroom Task Force, new news there. The bathroom is in San Lorenzo, locked again.
Oh, no.
As of yesterday, yep. Got photographs up on that page, Facebook page, Downtown Bathroom Task Force. I asked people in the area. The only report I got was that the plumbing had been backing up, not attributed to the previous claims of vandalism, but just the plumbing is not doing well. But there's no signage whatsoever, which makes it, you know, very schizophrenic. First, things are open and they're not open. So, you know, for people needing a bathroom immediately, to make your way to a bathroom and have it locked, that could be a terrible interpersonal catastrophe right there.
Particularly if you haven't got a change of clothing, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. You only have to imagine the hardship out there relating to the bathroom use for people who sleep outside. And, you know, if people aren't having a more empathetic view just around that, because we all poop, then, you know, people aren't thinking right, in my opinion.
You know, my contact with Susie O'Hara is limited, often through emails, because I've requested information from her at City Council and so forth. I usually have a lot of bad things to say about her because she was a... She masterminded the task force on public hysteria, as I call the task force on public safety. But I also found her personally, you know, no problem with that. She was expressing a lot of enthusiasm about the Boneyard barbed wire campground, or, you know, the River Street campground, as they call it. And also in a kind of hoping that the campground, well, it is open, presumably at least until the end of August. Do you think that you gave an account of your meeting with her? Did you get the feeling, am I to understand that there is, as far as you're concerned, no threat to shut down your storage, that you have complied with, there was a rumor that the city attorney or one of them had contacted you and said, get moving or else, you know.
Yeah, let's speak So I wear a lot of different hats, as you know, and in this regard, I won't be saying anything positive or negative about Susie O'Hara, just more, you know, measured around what we're trying to achieve. I don't have anything positive or negative to say about the encampment or those, all of those endeavors. But what we didn't, the only thing we got from the city manager, yeah, I mean, storage program 2.1, I'm sorry, point, you know, last year, the first iteration was, they did lead us down the path. We made a pretty big investment financially and with our own time to establish a program, and then they pulled it out from under us at the last minute because there's something that they claimed was our fault, which was our negative statements about the downtown streets team, which we copped to. I've been snarky. I'm confused about such massive spending. Oh, I see. I've already done it.
Brent, the only thing I was asking you was whether you feel more confident that you're not going to be bothered in the next 2 months.
I'm confident that we're not going to be bothered at least in the next month. What I'm doing is writing up a six-month plan that will be in her email box, the city manager's assistant, Susie O'Hara's email box, by Monday morning, that will lay out a plan that will then trigger another conversation about what the city planning, city permit, public works, and the city manager's office will counter, probably with some other, you know, before we get to an agreement. Part of that will be I'm looking for another parking lot that will be more private. The city, right now we're in a metered parking lot. The city can do whatever the fuck they want here with us, and that's and we are challenging the status quo unintentionally. So I see them. It turns out they don't have a lot of lateral moves as city workers. They're almost like robots, right? They're like, you're in this space. We only have two moves. One is to move, make you move, and the other one is to, you know, try to see what else you can come up with. That's so we're, you know, either we're going to transition to a box truck and keep it in this same spot for the next month or two, or move it to a box truck to another more appropriate parking lot, or move to a box truck first and or move directly into a facility that we lease. And she's, they're totally aware that that's the game. I just have to write those things up, request that we can be in the same parking lot in the same way that we are, maybe with a different truck, for at least the next month, because they understand that we've programmed people, have them expecting to come to this spot. If I change it, some people don't access our storage program only but once a month. So we could definitely easily confuse people. They'll show up for their stuff, and it won't be here. That'll be the worst of all possibilities, circumstances. So
you think that you have some assurance from her that the what may have been a previous threat from the city essentially is not going to be that it's, that you're in good shape for the next month.
I think they have some awareness. They took a tour of the vehicle. They looked at our organizing program. They looked up our butts in a lot of different ways, and they came away pretty impressed, I felt, today. Mm-hmm. So the ball's in my court to kind of lay out possible parameters, and they will ideally agree or have some suggestions. Yeah, but for the next month and or two, it seems like they totally understand that we will be in the parking lot and why. And they're not going to send the police. The letter was worded in such a way that they used the word cite us and discontinue. But now they're not. That seemed to be something to get me in the room, which it was very successful. It was really fucked up way to do it. I was begging to get in the room with a meeting for 2 months solid, and then finally this, you know. It's not the best way to behave, but I think that I've been challenging status quo behaviors to the point where they're confused about me. I'm an unknown quantity for them, but I think now upon seeing the program, I'm giving them an opportunity, Robert, to claim success and victory on their own for this program. As they're in hot water, a very stressful situation trying to develop their other programs, this can be seen as one of their recommendations come to fruition. They didn't have to spend a dime on it, and the city is actually benefiting from 90-plus people and their storage needs taken care of.
You will, of course, be demanding some kind of wage remuneration for your hundreds of hours of work, of course.
No. In the future, when we all learn how to play better together, and we're, unfortunately, you know, it's that sort of disruption concept that we're outside of their conceptual imagination, so we're a disruptor in the way we do things. It doesn't make sense to them just to go straight to the needs and build a program that's so lightweight and affordable. They're coming from funding streams that are essentially infinite. Again, $2,000 per tent per month. Nobody would ever think, nobody in this world would think that's a good budget.
That's the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campgrounds budget.
Yeah, but the city does. The city's doing that. They
oh,
doubled
course.
Down twice. They failed their closure deadline twice, and the third time, finally. They're going to be all the way out to September 1st before they close that thing, and it looks like they might actually close it, returning people to the street after spending that much money. When you spend that much money on a thing, the only logical thing is you are committed beyond any other force to make sure it happens and that it continues on in some way. But
let me ask you about storage, Brent, because you may remember there used to be Greyhound Bus Depot lockers, and then around the same time there were also lockers out at what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center at Coral Street. Are there any places in town where people can, I guess there's storage, you know, you can rent storage in a more sort of formal way. People do. Does the Homeless Lack of Services Center actually have storage facilities for its people there? Do you know?
No. In fact, here's a hot news flash. People from Homeless Persons Health Project, Evan Morrison, who does the veterans situation there, also people who run the Paul Lee Loft, all call us for their storage needs. They don't have any storage on that campus. They can't even access the storage bins at the River Street camp. They have two 40-foot steel structures there. The city's, you know, paid for hundreds of plastic bins, and they're exclusively to be used by the people at the encampment. Those people don't even really need storage. So, people use their SSI check or their, you know, whatever money they can get together, and some people have limited, you know, storage at a storage facility. No. Day and Night Storage Program is the only actual storage program in the city of Santa Cruz and in the county.
Now, another question.
No search programs offer storage. Winter Shelter did it in a limited way, but they lost people's stuff. I have to be careful to say that because that's our sister program. But, they did a terrible job at storage.
Well, I appreciate your candor, and I think, you know, as I've told you before, I think it's not your candor that's causing them, that may be a nice excuse for them, but that's not really the reason they make decisions. Who knows what their reasons are, but the reason they make the positive decisions has to do with your successes, and that I think will be the telling in the end. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about was rumors that there's going to be a sort of an RV camp or vehicle parking area opening up at one of the churches in a couple of months run by the Association of Faith Communities. Any word on that?
I don't have any recent word. What the good news was that the seven-day Adventist camp out on Old Santa Cruz Road, Old San Jose Road, we're going to make a deal with the Association of Faith Communities to allow 50 vehicles, as many as 100 people, with showers and all amenities, free of charge, with the Association of Faith Communities running it. The AFC went to the city, the county, and then finally the HAP to get federal or state money, and were denied at all corners. They told me last month at a meeting, or a month and a half ago, that they were not going to move forward with it because they didn't get the funding. And my word was, what the fuck are you talking about? You have the most difficult piece, which is the location and a willing partner to allow you to do this.
Right on.
You don't need any money at all at the basic. You just have to come up with a set of rules establish somebody who can live there 24/7 in an RV, managing those rules for free, for a free place to live, to a pensioner or somebody. But you don't need the quote-unquote wraparound services that everybody knows are non-existent anyway. I was shocked. I'm trying to encourage them to do this parking program by any means necessary, whether you get funding or not. Get it going now because it's vastly needed. But if they want, they wanted like something like $250,000 to hire a professional full time, and then to hire also somebody to monitor the space, have programs to service programs. But my assertion was that doesn't make any sense. If people are coming onto the space in the evening and leaving in the morning, you don't. It's not a day program, so you don't. It's not a space to actually get to use and access services. Those places already exist in the community. They're called, you know, Emmeline and Homeless Services, Homeless Persons Health Project, all kinds of other. If the services exist, go get them if you have a car. But you know, the anyway, I'm just over talking.
It's useful.
They're going to let that drop that ball. You know, we'll try to pick it up in the future.
Well, Brent, thank you for the update as ever. Anything you want to conclude with?
No, thank you. The hotline is 831-234-9848. I'm talking on that now. Warming Center Program at Gmail, warmingcenterprogram.com, and then the Facebook pages we mentioned. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye. And that, of course, was Brent Adams, 234-9848, in case you missed the number. Brent calls back, as you may have heard. He doesn't just call back somebody who has a sometime radio show like I do. He apparently calls back other folks, too, although Brent also can not just ruffle the feathers of people in the establishment. He also has ruffled and caused some serious conflicts with other activists as well, but we look to the future rather than to the past. So let's go musical, and I'll be back.
Lyndon thinks it's fine and grand to see the flag of his country in a foreign land. Everyone's happy, everything's clear. Didn't Germany die to the sound of a cheer? You know Hitler ain't dead. Hitler ain't dead. No, Hitler ain't dead. He's only hiding here. Just a few more countries we gotta invade, because a few more dollars have gotta be made. Labor, big business, Congress agree, like they used to do in Germany. You know Hitler ain't dead. Hitler ain't dead. No, Hitler ain't dead. He only crossed the sea. Our soldiers are marching in the world today. It's a civilized war in the Christian way. If they think you're dirty, they'll wash you clean. First with napalm, then Listerine. You know Hitler ain't dead. Hitler ain't dead. No, Hitler ain't dead. He just joined the Marines. It's gas in the jungle, blood on the street, shot down by the soldier or the cop on the beat. Saigon to Selma to the city hall, with his hand on the dollar and his back to the wall. You know Hitler ain't dead. Hitler ain't dead. No, Hitler ain't dead. He just talks with a drum. Pick up a spear, a powder and shot, a pen or machine gun, whatever you got. Fight for your freedom, starve or freeze, but die on your feet, don't live on your knees. You know Hitler ain't dead. Hitler ain't dead. No, Hitler ain't dead. He's among you and me.
And that was Peggy Seeger singing, I guess probably from the 60s or 70s, Hitler Ain't Dead, one I've never heard from her before. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, in case you just tuned in. And a reminder, we're still looking for studio space, 10 by 10. We're still looking for help finding such a space. And, you know, I was going to say I'm still uncertain what our the current situation is with the, well, I had heard it was $500. Then as our budget began to shrink, it became $300. You may still be able to score some of that money if you could find us a 10 by 10 space, access to electricity, internet, and a bathroom somewhere generally in the broader Santa Cruz area, so we can set up the studio that we think will draw more broadcasters, who will in turn draw more listeners, who will in turn be able to make more educated decisions about what's going on, or enjoy at least things as they happen. The number to call is, you can call the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833. You can go to freakradio.org, where you'll also find more information about free radio generally. Let me know, and who knows, you may benefit. You can claim you heard an old broadcast, and you want that money if you find us a space, and we can then hash it out at the next free radio meeting. So, a couple of, points of good news, as far as I'm concerned. Just got the word from activist Mike Rhodes of Fresno. The ACLU in San Francisco has put out this statement on Sacramento court's rejection of the Sacramento anti-panhandling ordinance. Here's what they say. Today, and that would be July 19th, the federal judge blocked the city of Sacramento's anti-panhandling ordinance. The ACLU Foundation of Northern California and the Legal Services of Northern California issued the following response. Today's ruling is a resounding victory for free speech and fairness, and is the first in California to make clear that the government can't arbitrarily enact anti-panhandling ordinances. Actually, I remember a decision way back in San Francisco in the very early 90s, but that may have been overturned by subsequent decisions up in Seattle at the federal level. On every point, the judge reaffirmed, this ACLU statement continues, that free speech applies to everyone. Instead of criminalizing people who ask for help, the city of Sacramento should act with compassion and allocate resources to those who most need them. A quote from Abray Connor, ACLU Foundation of Northern California. Then this from Elise Stokes. This preliminary injunction will allow vulnerable community members to ask for help without fear they will be harassed and or cited or arrested. We'll see about that. The judge's ruling should signal to cities that they have or are considering similar ordinances that they cannot trample on the rights of those experiencing homelessness. It's a reminder, it's just a lot of interesting rhetoric. Let's see if we actually can find more specifics about this ordinance.
For the past 4 years, James Clark has stood here outside the Sacramento Natural Foods Co-op and asked for help.
Basically, so long as I'm able to get through the day, that's all I'm really trying for.
However, last November, Sacramento City Council voted to make it illegal to panhandle within 30 feet of a business driveway.
They criminalized the act of asking for help and made it a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor. That's 6 months to a year in jail.
The ordinance went even further, banning it at gas stations, bus and train stops, outdoor restaurants, ATMs, and banks.
It's their right to ask for money and do so in a respectful way.
Bob Erlenbush is with the Sacramento Regional Coalition to End Homelessness, which filed the lawsuit on Clark's behalf.
It's a whole variety of reasons that people ask other people for money, and we should not criminalize that behavior.
A federal judge agreed and stopped the city's ordinance. In a statement to KCRA 3 News, Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg says the panhandling ordinance is a very small piece of our overall strategy. We will continue to focus the bulk of our effort on addressing the systematic causes of homelessness. With 19% of the city's population living below the poverty line, those who live in Sacramento know panhandling is unavoidable.
Sometimes that's the only way that they can get help, is by the generosity of other people.
I could see it being reasonable for businesses to ask people to stay outside of that.
For Clark, it's a win.
And it's really nice to actually be able to say, hey, something good finally.
And he can legally keep asking for help, even if it's disrupting others. In Sacramento, Tom Miller, KCRA 3 News.
And that's a pretty favorable news story, contrasted with what you usually hear. If you go online to the Sentinel Discus, if you just listen to I'm not watching a lot of television these days, but there's a bit of the kind of negative spin you get at the end of the story where he talks about people can now ask for spare change even if it disrupts others. No, you can't really disrupt others. It's just you can be near an ATM, you can be near a store. Unlike in Santa Cruz, where it is almost completely illegal to panhandle within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a bench, 14 feet of a fence, 14 feet of a phone booth, 14 feet of a sculpture, 14 feet of a trash can. This is in the downtown area. And, of course, people are punished by vigilantes for panhandling. But if we look simply at the legal situation, it has become increasingly restrictive in Santa Cruz. You may say, oh, no, I saw a guy sitting downtown in Santa Cruz panhandling. And, indeed, some people do so illegally, and the police ignore them on occasion. But that doesn't mean they can't swoop down at any time and take them away based upon the illegal, I should say, unconstitutional laws that Santa Cruz has. Second story goes on. A federal judge ordered an immediate halt Thursday to Sacramento's ordinance against aggressive panhandling. And again, the word aggressive panhandling doesn't mean, hey, fucker, give me some money or I'll beat you up. It means standing in Santa Cruz silently with a sign that says, need help. And if the sign can be seen from a distance of 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a bench, in other words, on 99% of the Pacific Avenue sidewalks in Santa Cruz and in other business districts as well and in beachfront areas as well, then that is an infraction punishable by $200 or $300 fine on the first offense. And if repeated, then the misdemeanor code that you heard the guy from Sacramento talk about comes into force, and it can be up to 6 months to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. U.S. District Judge Morrison E. England, Jr. issued a preliminary injunction against enforcement of the ordinance, not the Santa Cruz ordinance, mind you, the Sacramento ordinance, but this could be the basis for our Chicken Little, I wish they would say the sky was falling, because I think it is, actually. It has been falling for years. It's just suddenly people aren't even noticing the pieces of debris all around. It's become the new normal. But U.S. District Judge Morrison C. England, Jr. issued a preliminary injunction against enforcement of the ordinance, which was adopted unanimously by the City Council of Sacramento last November. As of now, it is in place, England said, adding that if attorneys for the city want to return with new evidence of why the injunction should be lifted, he will order a new hearing. Civil liberties groups and homeless advocates filed suit against the city in April, challenging the ordinance on behalf of James Lee Fago Clark, a well-known homeless activist who says that the ordinance unfairly kept him from soliciting for donations outside of Sacramento's Natural Foods Co-op at 28th and R Streets and other locations. This ruling protects the First Amendment, Clark, 37, said after the brief hearing, adding the injunction means he can resume his regular activities. I can go up to my spot at that co-op that I like to sit at and hold my sign peacefully, not bothering anybody, and try to get some food for the day, he said. I'll be able to do that without worrying about risking arrest. Mayor Daryl Steinberg declined to comment directly on the lawsuit, but noted the city is trying to address homelessness in a variety of ways. And you heard that quote before in the earlier commentary. The panhandling ordinance is a very small piece of our overall strategy. Of course, the major strategy is to drive people out and away in most cities. I can't speak for Sacramento, although they passed a camping ordinance, which is to say an anti-camping ordinance, in a town that has no shelter for the majority of its homeless folks, is my, I think, speculation. Until I see the evidence otherwise, that's what I generally claim with cities near and far. It's become so... If you're concerned about Trump's misstatements about everything under the sun, if you wonder where it came from, all you have to do is look at the ordinary day-to-day political statements of politicians here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere on homelessness generally. It's taken years for the city to admit that it criminalizes sleeping. And in fact, it only got somewhat abandoned, the enforcement of that ordinance, by essentially a kind of a police state action by a police chief rather than by democratic determination by the city council. When we tried to change it, and Don Lane finally got around to introducing something around this, he was beaten back, and it failed to pass. We have raised more than $120 million in public and private funds to get thousands of people off the streets humanely and effectively, which, of course, has nothing to do with people's civil rights for those who remain on the streets. That's what the Sacramento politician, Mayor Daryl Steinberg, is justifying his panhandling law with. City Attorney Susanna Alcala Wood said officials were disappointed with the judge's order and would provide additional information and seek reconsideration. Wood added that she believed Anglin showed a great deal of understanding of the difficult position the city faces. It really kind of, I almost feel like I'm wasting my breath reading this kind of stuff. There is wide agreement that aggressive behavior that creates unacceptable harm to individuals and businesses must be addressed in a meaningful way. This is gobbledygook for get these fucking ugly bums out of town by hook or by crook. Aggressive behavior in Santa Cruz, for example, under the 1994 panhandling ordinance, only three of the, I think, 25 sections of the panhandling ordinance have anything to do with actual aggressive behavior. That is to say, blocking someone's way, abusing them, threatening them, and so forth. Mainly because existing laws prohibit that. What they really want to do is make sure people never even ask for money to start with anywhere near stores, which they fear will drive away, as to say merchants fear, will drive away tourists. And in residential neighborhoods where you now have the development of these vigilante anti-homeless squads, who, for example, it was reported at the HUF meeting yesterday, that's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom group, which meets every other week, although we had a special meeting yesterday, where a woman who, an elderly disabled woman who lives in her vehicle, reported that there's a vehicle parked next to her, kept the lights on, banged on her van, demanded she leave, and she huddled inside at night, clutching her mace, is how she described it, afraid to come out. And she was on private property when this happened, on a church property, because and afraid to come out of her van or to respond to this. And apparently she survived the incident, but Huff is looking at ways to deal with this whole public safety issue for homeless people by encouraging homeless folks to form networks of mutual support, phone trees and so forth. Some people use different approaches. I believe the Colbys, Pat and John Colby, were able to successfully, through loudly demanding police protection, actually get some sort of acknowledgement of their disabled status, but still face, or did face, I haven't heard from them recently, all kinds of trouble and harassment from vigilante groups here in Santa Cruz, or from at least vigilante individuals. And there's a lot of discussion of what the city's position is. The city argued in court, the papers in Sacramento, the ordinance, the panhandling ordinance is constitutional. Attorneys need more time to study the steps, to consider amending it. City asked for 4 months to respond, with senior city deputy city attorney Sean Richmond saying an injunction would be a drastic remedy that would amount to de facto repudiation of a legislative act, i.e., enforcement of the First Amendment, allowing a homeless person to ask for money to buy a cup of coffee so that she can come in off the streets, maybe some sanitary napkins to deal with a bleeding problem. Anglin rejected that notion. That's the judge saying it may be bothersome to some people to be approached and asked for money, but the rights to free speech must be considered. The ordinance bans soliciting within 30 feet of ATMs. Ours bans it within 50 feet of ATMs or banks. Same here. Driveway entrances to businesses or near bus stops. It Our ordinance bans it within 14 feet in of all buildings, whether a business or not. And that's in the downtown business area and any business district and any beachfront district. And the group that fought this, Sacramento Regional Coalition to End Homelessness, they want a temporary stay against enforcing the order pending the outcome of the hearing. And let's hope that some attorneys here jump on board. Might make a little money off of this, too. Come on, Jonathan Gettleman. You know, get it together. Step up, all you so-called defenders of the First Amendment, and start defending it where it counts, among the people who are really getting attacked for exercising it and whose exercise of it is a part of the essential part of their basic human needs.
The mass of homeless property, looks like, or at least backpacks and such, that are on the porch of the back porch of the center, which maybe it's a makeshift storage area, which may be a positive thing. A guy sleeping on the bench, folks sleeping in the park.
And we're back at the Laurel Park at Tuesday's tabling, gathering signatures, demanding the reopening of the bathroom and sort of checking out what the actual situation is for a person who has to use a bathroom and is told to go somewhere else.
Larry having a smoke on the sidewalk. And Cherie collapsing in the grass. Cherie, what brings you to this neck of the woods?
I was just looking around the area trying to find somewhere to say where's the bathroom, because I really need to go to the bathroom. I'm walking and I'm old and there's nowhere to go in there. You can't, if you don't know someone, you're not allowed in.
Certainly not allowed into the bathroom. We don't want your kind in that particular area.
No, they tell me if you're not in a program or with a certain group that you're not allowed to use the bathroom. I'm not with a certain program that's with Loudon Nelson, but Mr. Loudon Nelson gave it to the public. He gave this and several other pieces of property, you know that, Robert, and he gave it for free for everyone to use. Have it be open bathrooms forever to the public. Thank you.
If only he knew what was going on.
I know. It's all jailed in now. I was here earlier when Robert helped me break into jail. You know, but it's real oppressive when you come up and it's all barred off like something's happening here or whatever. They have gold in here and now they don't even let you use the bathroom.
Talk about this iron wrought fence, black iron wrought fence, which is about 6 feet high around the whole park.
It's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. It's a waste of money. You should fix the cracks in the street and put fire pits on every beach and build more housing instead of do this oppressive stuff. I don't really like it, and neither does the neighborhood, the children, the middle-aged children, or the old people.
Well, if we could all get together and say that with one voice, I think we could change it pretty quickly.
I hope so.
But will that happen? Don't hold your breath.
Law Library.
I'm talking to Nick here.
Found the relevant health and safety government code for California, okay? It says every public agency with an establishment serving the public or open to the public shall make every toilet available without cost or charge to the patrons, guests, or invitees of the establishment. So, you know, there's not much wiggle room in there if you want to be a hard ass.
Good. I want to be a hard ass. I want my ass to have a hard place to sit down, too, or a soft place, or someplace. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, where is that code, and what's the number and so forth?
Yeah, that's the Health and Safety Code for California. It's HS118500 to 118505.
And which particular...
And it's in a section. No, that is the section, yeah. Chapter 2, Article 1.
Okay, because what I think we might want to do is print up a copy of that if we do this protest again, and give everybody a piece of it, walk in and say, open the bathrooms.
Yeah. You'll note it doesn't actually say that anybody
coming off the street or in the neighborhood can use the facility. So it doesn't say that. So I'm going to go look at some court decisions.
Excellent.
That probably extend the right.
Okay. And maybe we'll get a report from you on that. You, of course, are the co-founder of Conscience and Action.
Yeah, indeed. Conscience and Action, it was started around this issue. And it's an amalgam of several grassroots organizations, including your own, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, also including a couple of attorneys who show up voluntarily, personal friends of ours.
At least one attorney. Anyway.
Yeah. But I'm always trying to expand Conscience and Inaction. And we're the people who sat down with the city manager, who's having a nice holiday somewhere right now and using all the bathrooms he wants to, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, he's comfortable. But he left us in the lurch.
And out of the bathrooms.
But as soon as he left, they did open the San Lorenzo Park one.
That's correct.
So what's the connection?
That's a good question. Who knows? We're not sure yet. But maybe we'll find out through another Public Records Act request.
Oh, this sequel will be continued.
Yes, coming soon to a radio station near you.
City don't allow no peeing around here. City don't allow no peeing around here. We don't care what they don't allow. We gotta do it somehow. They don't want no peeing around here.
No peeing around here, folks.
Let's see. City don't allow no hanging around here.
Don't hang around.
No, city don't allow no hanging around here.
Where's your pass?
If you ain't got lots of money, it's not a joke and it's not funny. No, they don't allow no hanging around here.
None of that stuff either, please.
No, they don't allow no sleeping around here.
It's north.
If there ain't roof over your head, you're gonna have to stay awake instead. So don't you be sleeping around here. That's what we say.
And been listening to the music of...
This is Valerie. Yeah. Valerie Christie.
Thank you, Valerie.
Crying in the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in those unemployment lines. Sitting around there just waiting for a promotion. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution. Sounds like a whisper.
So what's the dope on the police station? What happened over there?
They have a training, so other than them having training, if they didn't have training, then...
Did they let you into the bathroom?
No, they had training, so they wouldn't allow
us.
Oh,
not open 9 to 4.
No,
those lurdy dyers. Hi, Cracky. And what's your name?
Rosa.
And Rosa, have you signed the petition to reopen the bathrooms?
No, not yet.
Would you like to?
Yes, please.
All right.
And the point here is that the Loudon Nelson staff suggested that these weary folks holding their water and holding their poo-poo walk to the police station where they could use the bathroom. And, in fact, when I called the police station earlier, I was informed by a police official that, the bathrooms are open 9 to 4 Monday through Thursday. Of course, when they got there, and this was four hours later after my phone call, when these people, you know, were told they couldn't use the bathroom right down the hall at the Loudon Nelson Center. They had to go all the way across the street, half a block away, which you say, well, it's that far. Well, if you're 65 years old and if you have to use a bathroom, that can be quite a distance. But even that distance didn't make any difference, because when they got there, they were told it's being used for training. Now, what that means, I have no idea. Anyway, let's hear a little more before we conclude this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
We're talking with
Posner.
And Phil, you're here on your bike with your
your famous book, The Rabbi and His Famous Friends. Isn't that a new book? I didn't see that book.
It's an old book.
It's the same old book. I thought there was a Chicken Soup for the Soul or some such thing. So we've just learned, Phil, from Rosa here, who went over to the police station, which is where they're directing people to go, saying that the police will let you use their bathroom. That because of, tell me if I got this right, Rosa, training over there, they will not allow people to use even the police station bathroom at this time. But if you wait until training is over,
maybe you can go and use the restroom.
When is training over, in September?
We don't know.
It's a mystery, you know. And these are deeper questions, Bill. We don't really have answers to at this time. I'll show you the flyer we've written if you're interested.
What time is it?
It's time to open the bathrooms
to the public.
It's about 2:50. I mean, 10:02.
In 15 minutes.
You did good.
The top of the wharf.
And you're looking good.
Number three. So are we going around it? Doing questions, interviewing people?
We are. We got a bunch of people who kind of been passing by. We've been snagging them. We could actually go by. There's, for example,
there's a couple of people on the front lawn.
You could do that.
Joe has showed up. All right.
All times. Okay. So you have to put your dog on leash as well as keep it on the sidewalk out of the park.
If I put her right there in my box, that's
not allowed. That will get you a citation because it's inside the park.
So and if I put on that side, I'm okay.
Yeah. In addition to that, sir.
And this is, of course, an officious park and ranger woman directing Phil Posner, one of the activists with Conscience and Action, that he can't have his dog on the park side of the fence. It's a little teeny dog. Citing the rules about dogs in the park. And I'm not necessarily a fan of dogs in the park or dogs out of the park, but having someone patrolling around enforcing ordinances on people, particularly poor people, and Phil isn't, I don't know how poor Phil is, but this seems to be the new pattern here at the Loudon Nelson and other places around town with First Alarm, and now the more official Parks and Rec, who carry tasers, I'm told, by Carol Skurich, head of Parks and Rec, and who can issue citations that will cost you hundreds of dollars and may get you banned from areas, ultimately for months at a time, if you dare to set foot in them again, even before you're taken to court. This is the new Santa Cruz way.
We actually don't allow any bikes on the grass in this park either. All bikes are required to be over at our bike rack.
Okay, Ohana. Ohana.
Get that dog. It's a criminal dog. Get the questionable pooch.
Yeah, bad dog.
You never would have thought that dog was a criminal, but by cracky. You never can tell it. Want another one?
they just love to hassle.
Ever since then, they've been very nice. I'm going to be
honest. Yeah. He wants to know what happened, right?
He knows about it.
No, but this thing with the dog.
Oh, you recorded some of it.
Okay.
The name of the dog that was banned from the park?
No, you remember when they cited me for soliciting downtown with a dog?
Oh, with a dog.
Yeah.
You had to muster.
What is the dog's name?
You got to buy my book.
He's a profiteer. What are you going to do, man?
That's my usual stupid line. People say, well, her name is Ohana. Ojo, big guy. Ojo. Abu Sarab.
Ohana?
Sí. Porque tiene ojos muy grandes.
Ah. Yes, you have very big eyes. And a cute little smile, too. Yes, you do.
Phil just signed up another opponent of current closing policy. I think, well, they have. At this point, we were walking around with a petition at Phil's initiative, getting people to sign the demanding the bathrooms be reopened. We also had gotten some support and a tip of the hat to Joe Schultz of India Joe's, who was supplying food for this. Actually, it was a cold smoothie and what was became a warm day. I have access to the bathrooms. They will let kids use bathrooms here.
If you're participating in the class, you
can. But, you know, if you're not, you can't
no.
use the bathroom.
Yeah, it's not.
Would you like to sign off the petition asking that it be open to everybody?
No, thank you. I actually work here. I don't really want to sign anything. Thank you, though.
That makes sense.
An employee does not want to sign because he's an employee. Or perhaps because he likes to have closed bathrooms. Who knows? Maybe he has to clean them up.
That's a personal question.
Well, I'm not working here, but as an employee, I do have access to employees.
This is the Parks and Rec woman who was warning people about dogs and bikes. Warning us.
Unfortunately, I can't sign petitions while I'm at work. I can't express my views at work.
Here. Would you like us to contact you when you're off work?
Yeah.
No, thank you. You're welcome to talk to someone at the police department. That's who I report to now, so you can speak to any of the higher-ups at the police department.
No, we're just interested in whether you as an individual citizen are interested.
I am not interested. I try to keep my private life and work separate, so I'm not going to discuss any.
Don't try to use the bathrooms when you're not on duty.
She said she could use the bathroom.
Not when she's not on duty, she can't.
Oh, right.
I don't think. Is that right?
If I'm not attending a class, I have the same policy as everyone else.
Same restrictions.
Same restrictions, yeah.
And you think those are okay?
Oh, I'm not able to comment on some of this stuff.
You can. You choose not to. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
That's Ranger E. Thomas, I think her name is Thompson.
Yeah, Thomas. E. Thomas.
E. Thomas, yeah.
And that's about all we have time for on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Come back again on Sunday, and hopefully you'll get more focused information, perhaps more information from the documents that some Huff members are poring over that we finally got from Parks and Rec. We're trying to pin down exactly what specific actions required, supposedly, officials to close these bathrooms, and whether this was taken with any kind of public discussion whatsoever, and what the process was. And we're still having trouble locating those documents. Apparently it happened in a somewhat opaque way. Talk to you again, or talk at you again on Sunday. If you want to reach me between times, call the Huff Homeless United line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
And, of course, you're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM. FreakRadio.org. We could always use your donations, however large or small, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Make checks payable to FRSC. Mail to P.O. Box
7811.
Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Again, FRSC, P.O. Box
7811.
Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or visit our website at freakradio.org. You can PayPal a donation there. Desperately need them.